Fasten your seatbelt and turn up the radio. We're going on a road trip. I'm Glenn Moberg, and today on Route 51, it's back to politics as we welcome for the first half of our program, 7th Congressional District incumbent Republican Sean Duffy. Mr. Duffy was elected to his first term in 2010, becoming the first Republican to hold the 7th Congressional seat since Dave Obey was elected 41 years before. He faces former state senator and television news anchor Pat Kreitlow in the November 6th election. Both Mr. Kreitlow and Mr. Duffy have agreed to appear in a debate at the UW Marathon County Center for Civic Engagement in Wausau on October 22nd. That's a debate sponsored by Wisconsin Public Radio, the Wausau Daily Herald, WAOW ABC TV 9, WSAW CBS TV 7, and the Wisconsin Institute for Public Policy and Service. Congressman Duffy will be with us for the first 30 minutes of the show. Political scientist Eric Giordano of the Wisconsin Institute for Public Policy and Service will join us for the second half. So if you've got a question for Mr. Duffy, you need to call right now to get in line. Give us a call at 1-800-780-9742. That's 1-800-780-9742. We do have full phone lines right now, but keep trying. I'm going to ask a few questions at the start of the show, and then I'll try to get in as many phone calls as we can. Sean Duffy, thanks so much for being with us again today.
Hey, Glenn, it's great to be on. Thanks for having me here.
Well, you're coming up on the end of your first term in office. What are your biggest accomplishments, and why should voters reward you with a second term?
Absolutely. First of all, when I got to Congress, I wasn't even a sworn in yet, but I was a congressman-elect. I got there, went to the Republican conference that was going to take the majority, and I introduced a resolution to ban earmarks in the 112th Congress. It doesn't get a lot of press, but there's no Cornhusker kickbacks today. There's no earmarks in this Congress, and I think that's a real positive. I led the way to freeze pay for all federal employees, excluding our military. But most importantly, I included members of Congress, making sure their pay didn't go up at a very difficult time in our economy. I voted for the Restrict Act. I actually introduced the Restrict Act, and what that was a bill that would address congressional insider trading. It was a big issue that came up last year. A book came out by Peter Schweitzer called Throw 'Em All Out. Members of Congress were profiting from their roles as members of Congress. I introduced a bill that Peter Schweitzer said went the furthest to fix this problem. A lot of my ideas got in to the final legislation, which was called the Stock Act, that passed. I'm proud of that. I'm also proud that I went to Washington and with a $16 trillion debt and trillion-dollar deficits every year, year over year, I was part of a team that introduced a budget that actually balanced.
Well, we've had quite a turnaround in the national polling for the presidential race, but Mr. Obama still leading in Wisconsin, although by a smaller margin than he was a week ago. Do you think the addition of Paul Ryan to the ticket, was that a smart choice, or might it have been a liability just because he's been so outspoken on hot-button issues like Medicare, Social Security, and abortion?
Well, first of all, I think most Americans now with Paul Ryan on the ticket understand that per the Congressional Budget Office, a nonpartisan group, it says that Medicare is going broke in 10 years. The Medicare trustees, they're responsible for Medicare. They say it's going broke in 12 years. And so Americans want solutions to fix these problems. They just don't want folks to wring their hands and kick the can down the road. They want bold solutions to fix the problems that we face. They want a Congress that's going to fix our debt. And what I think is important is you have a group in the House that are willing to put their ideas on the table on how we fix these problems. But if you look over to the President and the Senate, controlled by Democrats, they haven't offered solutions that actually fix Medicare. They haven't offered budgets in the Senate for 3 years. And the president hasn't offered a budget that ever balances. So, I mean, listen, we're putting out ideas that work, and I think Paul's addition has been a great one and driven attention to these very important issues.
I want to get into Medicare. I'm just going to play two short tapes. These are the only tapes that we'll be playing this afternoon. You've got a new ad out. It's a really cute ad about Medicare featuring your mom, Carol, who, by her own admission, is a lifelong Democrat.
I'm a lifelong Democrat, and I'm voting for Sean Duffy. People might expect the mom to vote for her own son, but Sean really had to earn my vote. We don't always agree, but I know Sean will fight to protect Medicare, and that's what matters most. Don't believe the lies. Sean will do what's right for Medicare and seniors, and that's why I'm voting for you.
Thanks, Mom. I'm Sean Duffy, And I approve this.
Sean, did you really have to convince your mother to support you?
Listen, my mom and I have a lot of great conversations about politics. My dad, also a Democrat, but not a lifelong Democrat. Thanksgiving dinner, I can tell you, Glenn, is quite interesting at the Duffy household because we don't always agree on politics.
Well, let me go on here.
Sure.
Here's the reaction of your Democratic opponent, Pat Kreitlow, to this ad. We caught up with him on the campaign trail yesterday.
I have said all along for over a year now that this Congress gets the worst approval ratings ever, 9 or 10%. And the only reason it's ever been that high is that some of their mothers answer some of these poll questions. This is a Congress that only a mother could love. Beyond that, everybody else knows the truth about Congressman Duffy's record on Medicare and the budget, and that's why he is not going to be deserving of a second term. If a politician has to trot out his mother to say that she'll vote for him, you know he's in trouble.
Well, Kreitlow says the reason you ran that ad with your mother, and Democrats in general say the reason that Paul Ryan did basically the same thing, he brought his mother out on stage to say that Republicans wouldn't hurt Medicare, they say it's because you're losing the argument. They say that the American people don't want a voucher system for Medicare, either a complete voucher system or even a partial one, with private insurance as an option. They don't want it for today's seniors or tomorrow's seniors, those under the age of 55. They say seniors want Medicare preserved exactly as it is, forever, no vouchers, no privatization. They want it for themselves and for their children and their grandchildren. How do you respond to the argument?
First of all, the ad is important because my mom is a senior. She relies on Medicare, and I'm not going to do anything to hurt Medicare for seniors today. I'm working my heart out to make sure we protect it, we preserve it, we save it for our seniors. My family relies on it, and that's why that's important. But I think let's have an honest conversation. It's going to take us a couple moments to discuss it, Glenn. But first, I want to talk about what the president does in Obamacare. When you have a group of Democrats and a plan that Pat Kreitlow supports saying we're going to save or cut $716 billion out of Medicare, instead of keeping that $716 billion in Medicare to shore it up, because we just talked about it's going bankrupt and broke, instead of keeping it in Medicare, they use it as a piggy bank to fund Obamacare. Our seniors are so angry about Social Security being used to fund other programs, their trust fund being raided, and now you have Pat Kreitlow supporting taking money out of Medicare when it's going broke. That's unacceptable.
Democrats say that there was no $716 billion cut. They call it a $716 billion addition, not a subtraction, an addition. They say they're putting more money into the system by refusing to pay overcharges. They say they've added benefits for current seniors, like free yearly checkups, more prescription drug benefits, and they extended the life of Medicare by 8 years with that $716 billion. And they say if you're successful in removing the $716 billion savings, which they say is not a cut, it would effectively bankrupt the system in just 4 years.
So Glenn, no one argues that the Democrats take $716 billion out of Medicare and use it for Obamacare. No one has disputed that. Pat Kreitlow won't dispute that.
But doesn't it extend it by 8 years?
If you believe that math, Glenn, and your listeners believe the math, that you can take $716 billion in savings in Medicare, if that's what they want to call it, and use it for Obamacare, use it as a piggy bank for another program, and it adds to the life of Medicare, you have bought into this fuzzy D.C. math.
Well, that's what they say. They say it adds eight years to it, and seniors are going to get free medical checkups that they never had.
Listen, of course, because they don't want to admit to seniors that they're robbing Medicare to fund Obamacare. I mean, that's the bottom line. But if you can come in here and tell every senior with a straight face that I'm going to take $716 billion out of Medicare, use it for Obamacare, but don't you worry, I'm prolonging the life of it by stealing that money. Man, there's some bridges down in Florida that are going to be for sale that you should buy. I mean, that doesn't make sense.
You voted to do away with Obamacare. When you ran 2 years ago, you said you wouldn't vote to abolish it until there was a replacement plan. What changed?
Well, I voted to repeal, and I proposed a replacement. I put out, people can go to my website, your listeners, to duffy.house.gov. But I put out a plan that is a market-based solution that will empower patients and families to make decisions on their health care that work for them, as opposed to empowering bureaucrats in Washington to make decisions on what kind of health care you'll get in the future. And so what we did is basically said, listen, let's allow for competition across state lines. If you see a great plan in a different state, you can buy that. We want price transparency to make sure you can find out what the cost of a procedure is before you use it. I mean, whatever we buy in this marketplace, we're oftentimes able to find out the price. We deal with Medicare reform, tort reform. I allow for pools that take care of those with pre-existing conditions, but I don't do it with a mandate. I do it with a state fund. Common sense solutions that drive a market, empower people, reduce cost, and increase access.
Are you going to force seniors to go try to buy insurance on the open market, like an 85-year-old man with diabetes, an artificial hip, a heart condition? Private insurance companies don't want to insure this guy at any cost.
So you're going back to Medicare. Let's talk about what our plan is. What we do is say, listen, if you're 55 or older, you get traditional Medicare that was pre-Obamacare, where the $716 billion isn't taken out of Medicare. If you're 54 or younger, we've all acknowledged that Medicare is going broke. We need to put a plan on the table that preserves and protects it. We give seniors a choice. They can stay on traditional Medicare, or they can choose what we call premium support. And in premium support, like a federal employee, there's a number of different plans that are pre-approved that you can choose from. There can be slimmed down plans or beefed up plans, but you can pick a plan that works for you. The government gives you that premium support. The poorer you are and the sicker you are, the more support you get. The wealthier and healthier, the less support you'll get. So the Mark Zuckerberg of the world, that he's the founder of Facebook,
right,
billionaire, they get very little support. But by doing this, by giving people the choice to pick a plan that works for them, engage in the market, we're actually able to preserve Medicare for the next generation, but also save it for those who are in the retirement today. And I think you have to compare that today, Glenn, with all of the reforms that happened in Obamacare. They didn't fix Medicare. They took money out of it. And so those people who are 55 today, at the point that they're about to retire, Medicare's going broke. And that's the plan that Senator Crailo has supported, which I think has made so many seniors frustrated and concerned that their program is being used as a piggy bank.
The argument is that if you have this premium support system, even as an option for people under 55, or a voucher is what the Democrats call it, what you'll do is you'll have people who are relatively healthy getting those vouchers, but only the sickest and most desperate people will end up in traditional Medicare, and that'll bankrupt the system.
It won't. You're allowed additional support for the older and the sicker that you get. And so you'll have plans that are available to you. But listen, you have to understand, we're talking about a set of ideas that give the choice of traditional Medicare or premium support for that future generation of retirees. If you were to ask the Democrats, who had control of Congress for 2 years and had the presidency, what they've given America is a Medicare system that's going broke and bankrupt. That's what they're leaving off for our seniors. And they have no plan on the table to fix it. So, I mean, again, I'm proud to put ideas on the table that are going to fix Medicare, that are going to fix Social Security, that are going to bring America to a point of balancing the debt. I know that all of my ideas, all the things that I voted for, won't pass in their current form. But here's what we have to do to fix the problems, Glenn. You need the other side to put their ideas on the table. What do the Democrats want to do to fix Medicare? What do they want to do to balance the budget? They won't put their ideas on the table. So how do you come together and negotiate and find solutions that work for America? They'll stand on the sidelines and throw bombs at a plan that actually is trying to save and protect it. All the while, the program is going broke, and they've done nothing to help fix it. That's my concern. And listen, I know I'm not going to have everything that I want, but I'm willing to engage in the conversation. I think we need to be honest with each other. Let's have an honest conversation, identify the problem, and then honestly come up with solutions and negotiate, work together, debate it, talk about it, argue about it, and then get a plan that works for America. But if only one side is doing it, and the other side's not willing to engage in that conversation, then you get a problem of gridlock, and you don't get solutions on the table that can fix the problems that Americans want fixed.
So let's talk about the deficit real quick, and then I want to get into these phone calls that are stacking up. Simpson-Bowles' plan says we need new tax revenue as well as spending cuts. Are you willing to see any tax increases at all? Because you signed the Grover Norquist pledge, didn't you, to not raise taxes under any circumstances?
Here's what we did in our budget, and I'll tell you about what I think the plan has to be moving forward. What we did is we brought spending down to 2008 levels. It was pre-bailout, pre-stimulus. We cap it there for 5 years, and so as your economy grows, your spending doesn't. That's one of the key tenets to balancing your budget. Don't spend more, but grow and have greater income. We then we reformed our tax code, where we are able to reduce rates for everybody, but we take away all those preferences and loopholes at the top end where the top 1 and 2% have carved themselves out of the tax code. We carve them back in, and then we're able to reduce rates for everybody. But this is a way to kickstart and grow our economy. And you know what? I'm willing to consider anything the Democrats put on the table. But again,
why did you sign that pledge from Grover Norquist?
Listen, what I've done is I've told everyone in the 7th district as I was running as a candidate, I don't think that raising taxes creates jobs. I don't think it creates economic growth. In fact, I agree with Bill Clinton and Barack Obama of 2 years ago. Raising taxes right now isn't going to grow the economy. If you look at data on how you bring economic growth, revenue into the federal coffers, it comes from economic growth. More people working, more people making money, more people paying taxes drives more revenue into the federal coffers, which means we have more money to pay down our debt. And raising taxes, as Bill Clinton and Barack Obama have said, isn't going to create that growth.
Did you have to sign a pledge from this private individual? Couldn't you have said, listen, Grover, you little man, get out of my office. I'm a congressman. I'm not going to sign any pledges except pledges to the people of the 7th Congressional District.
If I had to do it again, I wouldn't have signed the pledge. But I had told everyone here what I thought about taxes. But let me say this quickly. If you talk about – so there's just quickly on taxes, and I know you got to get your phone calls. But some say, like Senator Kreitlow, let's raise just the tax rates from 35% to 40%. Well, we all, I'm not going to say on your program, but as everyone's driving in their car tonight, they can think of one company or very wealthy people who don't pay any taxes. And so if you just raise the rates from 35 to 40%, those people still don't pay. They've still been carved out of the tax system. And what you've done is you've raised taxes on every small business and every small manufacturer in our area. What I say is, listen, take away those loopholes, take away those preferences, and with that, you get a fairer, flatter, simpler tax code. It takes away the crony capitalism. That's what's important. And one other thing, Glenn, you look at Senator Kreitlow. He voted for the largest tax increase in Wisconsin history. And I know he comes in here and he talks about millionaires and billionaires. As a state senator, he didn't raise taxes on millionaires and billionaires. He raised taxes, or he voted to raise taxes, on every middle-class Wisconsin family. Not only that, if you are a business owner, small business, small manufacturer, he voted to raise taxes on every single employee that you have. And if you choose to hire one more employee or two more employees, you'll be taxed for every new employee you hire. That doesn't create job growth. That shrinks our economy and puts more people out of work. That's the wrong way.
That 7th District Congressional, he's a candidate, but he's also our incumbent congressman, completing his first term, Sean Duffy. We're going to take a quick break and then take your phone calls right after this.
Support for Wisconsin Public Radio comes from Northwind Renewable Energy in Stevens Point, adapting renewable energy and wood heat solutions to meet the needs of homes, farms, and business. Information at northwindre.com.
I'm Glenn Mobrig. This is Route 51 Regional Talk Radio. We have 7th District Congressman, Republican incumbent Sean Duffy with us for about another 15 minutes. We're going to go to your phone calls. Let's go to, let's take Tony in Tomahawk. Tony, you're on Route 51 with Sean Duffy.
Hi, thanks. Congressman, a quick correction. Even Paul Ryan says that the budget that you voted for, the Ryan budget, doesn't balance the budget for 30 years. 30 years. And my question is, why not have more debates? I mean, Obama and Romney are pretty busy, but you're only having one debate. Why not have two or three or four debates?
Is Tony still on the line? If he could stay on.
Tony's still on the line,
right? Tony, but quickly, the House, I'm sorry, the Senate-controlled chamber with the Democrats, when does their budget balance? You know?
Well, Ryan said his doesn't balance
for
30
years. The Senate budget, when does that balance?
No, Ryan's on record for saying that.
It doesn't balance because they don't have a budget. The president's budget, when does his balance? It doesn't balance. I'll answer that for you. Here's the deal, Tony. It does take 30 years to balance. You're right.
Okay.
But it puts us on a trajectory to balance. Listen, it's a big problem. We owe $16 trillion in debt. We borrow $1 trillion a year. So it's going to take us some time to get on this trajectory to balance.
30 years?
But listen, I agree with you. But I would say, listen, I would love to hear what the Senate Democrats propose, what Pat Kreitlow proposes, to get us to a point of balance earlier. This is a start. No one else has proposed budgets that actually balance. And so some will say it doesn't balance soon enough. Others will say this is radical. This is extreme. You know what? We put our ideas on the table. I would challenge anyone else to put their ideas on the table on how we get a budget that balances and then we can negotiate.
I just know
but the Democrats haven't done that yet, Tony.
Sean Duffy, Tony's other question, why not more debates? So you've got two. You've got one here at UW-Marathon County, another at UW-Superior.
Yeah, what we've been able to do is get a debate, which you actually led, Glenn, where the first debate we were able to set up and agree to incorporated all the media in Wausau. We have NPR, as you mentioned. We have Channel 7, Channel 9. We have the paper all coming together to film and record a debate that we're going to do here in Wausau, all the media. And we're doing the same up in Duluth, where that's the second biggest market. We're bringing everybody in, having a debate where everyone can hear the conversation that both members or both candidates are going to have discussing the issues. And I look forward to having a conversation about Senator Kreitlow's tax increases, the largest deficits that he brought the state of Wisconsin.
All right.
I'm going to enjoy it.
Let's move on. We're going to go to Joshua in Wausau. Joshua, you're on Route 51 with Sean Duffy. 1-800-780-9742 is the phone number.
Hello, Congressman. How are you?
Hey, Joshua.
Hey, I had a quick question for you. In 2010, you called for a televised debate, and now you refuse to hold one. What has changed?
Oh, nothing. You see, we have Channel 7 and Channel 9 who are part of this debate we're having here in Wausau, and Glenn can attest to that. He's the one that set it up.
Look, we just answered that question. Do you have another point you'd like to make, or do you want to move on? Let's move on to the next caller. We have Dorothy in Mosinee. Dorothy, you're on Route 51 with Sean Duffy.
Hello. Sean, Congress just let the farm bill lapse without passing it. And can't you see how the drought has really hurt the dairy farmers? And then I heard that it was caused by because you couldn't get a big enough cut in the food stamps. So what's the problem?
Dorothy, good question. We have a very vibrant dairy economy here in the 7th Congressional District. And that's why I worked with our leadership, pushing them to try to bring that farm bill to the House floor, get a vote, and get it passed. I wasn't effective in getting them to do it. I feel very confident, though, when we get back in the lame duck session, we're going to be able to get a farm bill passed and make sure we have all the needed programs for our farmers here across the 7th Congressional District.
And let's move on to Pat in Wausau. Pat, you're on Route 51 with Sean Duffy.
Hello, I have a question for Mr. Duffy. In the election 2 years ago, you demanded to have a debate. But now, 2 years later, you refuse to debate the issues. Why is that?
Listen, Pat, thanks for the phone call. Listen, we're having a debate on November 22nd at every media outlet.
October 22nd.
October 22nd.
November would be a little bit beside the point.
Yeah, October 22nd. All the media outlets are going to be involved recording that same up in Superior, where you have every TV station, the newspaper, and NPR. So I feel very comfortable that all the folks in the 7th District are going to have an opportunity to hear these debates.
Let's go on to Jeremy in Stevens Point. Jeremy, you're on Route 51 with Sean Duffy.
How you doing? Hi, Congressman Duffy.
Hey, Jeremy.
Hi. I was just wondering about the redistricting that occurred in 2010, and I'm just wondering if you or anyone connected to your office or campaign ever participated in any discussion about redrawing Portage County out of this congressional district, and when did you first learn that the Democratic leaning chunk would be removed from District 7?
Oh, you know, I saw the maps as they're being done. We throw our opinion in here and there, and I guess I got to tell you, it's been well over a year since those negotiations and conversations were going on, and when the maps came out. So I got to tell you, I don't recall what those conversations were. But if you want, send me an email, and I'll do my best to get some information to you.
Okay.
Thanks, Jeremy.
All right, Jeremy, thanks so much for the phone call. Let's move on to Brian in Rhinelander. Brian, you're on Route 51 with Sean Duffy.
Hi. Say, Congressman, you've taken more than $100,000 in reimbursements from your campaign in your congressional office. Isn't that a lot?
I don't know what you're referring to, Brian. What is that?
Oh, reimbursements?
Well, so listen, I mean, there's things that I do, whether it's driving around the district, staying in a hotel, or sometimes flying out to D.C. and back that I've taken a reimbursement on as part of the official job duties as a congressman. I guess I don't know what the total of the reimbursements are, but they're for those kind of travel expenses, whether it's in a car, in a hotel, or in an airplane.
Yeah, well, yeah, I mean, you were reimbursed 27 times for staying in hotels in the district, even though you own three homes there. I mean, how is that reasonable?
Well, frankly, I don't know. I don't own any homes, but I'm a renter right now. I sold my own home up in Ashland. But you make a good point. Thank you for bringing it up. I've been one of the most open and accessible congressmen in this district for a very long time. I've done a town hall in every county every year. And on top of that, we've started a mobile office that travels throughout the district, bringing congressional services to the more rural and smaller parts of the district. And when you do that, it's a big district. It goes, you know, from Stevens Point up to Superior. It goes over from Polk County up to Iron County. It's a big district. And if you get out there and you talk to people, you see people, you engage with them, you got to spend some time on the road. And that's what I've done. If you look at our history, oftentimes someone would just sit in Wausau and doesn't get out. I'm very proud of the fact that I get out and engage with people in this district, and that's why they appreciate the hard work and effort that I put in listening to their concerns. And to do that, you got to get in your car, you got to drive around, you got to go listen, you got to go see.
Sean, let's move on. We got people stacked up. Let's go to Byron in Wausau. Byron, you're on Route 51 with Sean Duffy.
A couple of questions related to the many mailings that I received from your office. Dave Obey used to send a letter out every 6 months or so with detailed information on pending legislation. What I get from you are fancy, expensive-looking multicolor cards with slogans and sometimes survey questions. But a newspaper article said your office had sent the third highest mailing costs in Congress. How much taxpayer money have you actually spent on those mailings? Because they come very, very often. In the last year and a half you've been there, and are the printing costs covered as well as the mailing expenses on the things you send out? Does the taxpayer pay for the printing too?
Byron, let's give Sean Duffy a chance to respond.
Yeah, so in an effort to make sure everyone is updated on what I'm doing here in the district, again, I've done the town halls, I've done the coffees with your congressman, I've done the mobile office, I've done mailings, I've done a lot of things to make sure people are in tune with what's happening in D.C. I am their closest contact point to the federal government. But I will say in regard to costs in an office, everyone is given a budget. I'm proud that every year I've been a member of Congress, every year we've reduced our budget in our offices up to and over 10%. So we've reduced since the year before. Every year I've been in Congress, we spend less than when my predecessor held the seat.
And let's move on to Betsy in Wausau. Betsy, you're on Route 51 with Sean Duffy.
Thank you. Sean, what specific fixes do you want to make concerning Obamacare?
What specific fixes? I voted for its repeal. Now, that doesn't mean, Betsy, there's not some good things in there. Making sure folks have coverage for pre-existing conditions, I think that's important. Extending the age for our young people so they can continue to get coverage beyond that 18-year-old level. I think that's important. So I've incorporated things like that in the healthcare bill that I put out that, again, is on my website. But I voted for its repeal, and I've also put out its replacement.
Okay, but I still would really like to know what it is about Obamacare that you don't like and would like to fix.
What I don't like, the mandate. I don't like the fact that it empowers bureaucrats in Washington to decide what kind of health benefits we get in Wisconsin. I don't like the fact that it steals $716 billion out of Medicare to fund this new program. Those are some of the big ones. It has what's called the Independent Payment Advisory Board, the IPAB board. It's 15 unelected bureaucrats that are going to decide systematically how you can reduce reimbursements for certain procedures in the healthcare system. And if you do that, you're going to have a significant impact on the quality and access to care. And it's going to be a board that is unappealable and unelected. And I don't think that's a system that our founders would have envisioned,
Betsy,
for a healthcare system here in America.
Betsy, thanks so much for the phone call. And Sean, the argument is you need that individual mandate to make the rest of it work, things like forcing insurance companies to cover pre-existing conditions.
Well, we do it in a different way. We set up a pool in the state of Wisconsin. We drive federal funding into that pool, into that exchange. And we think by using the market as opposed to a mandate, it's a far more effective way to deal with pre-existing conditions and the cost component of it. And you know what? I think people are upset that they're going to be forced or mandated to buy insurance when they may not want to.
Let's go to one more call because Mr. Duffy has to move on. We'll go to Anna in Wausau.
Yes. Hello, Mr. Duffy.
Hi, Anna.
You know, very concerned about the Medicare reform that Governor Romney wants to make. He says people won't be affected. I'm over 55. I know it's not going to hurt me. But there are some people who are approaching age 55. I just don't understand this voucher thing. How much money is in a voucher, and is it going to be enough to buy insurance? And for how many years will it pay for it?
Well, so, Anna, you bring up a good point. We had addressed this earlier, but I will address it one more time. Those who are approaching 55, they're in a situation where Medicare is going broke. It's going to be bankrupt by the time they get there. So we have put forth a set of ideas that will actually protect it for this next generation, and they'll have an option of keeping traditional Medicare or going into what we call premium support. And that premium support program will have pre-approved plans through Medicare. And I believe to give people a choice of a plan they may want, it could be slimmed down, it could be beefed up, but they get a choice on a plan that works for them. And they'll get support from the government to buy it. And we think by allowing choice and competition, we'll be able to drive down costs. I'm going to give you one example, Medicare Part D. The Congressional Budget Office, that rarely overestimates the cost of any program, usually they far underestimate the cost, they estimated the cost of Medicare Part D. Because of choice and competition, we have seen the cost of Medicare Part D come in 40% under projected estimates by the Congressional Budget Office. That's because choice and competition, making people compete for your business, is, we think, the best way to make them more accountable and credible.
Why should insurance companies make money? They shouldn't make money. They should be neutral. They should not be profit-driven.
Well, Anna,
that's why I think the government needs to step in there. And I was just hearing these ads about Tommy Thompson, how he got into the Medicare medication debate.
There's some, Anna, who believe that no business should make a profit. And therefore, we've seen that tested in Soviet Russia. It's the Soviet Union. And you look there, and it didn't work
Israel
very well.
Israel has it, and it works wonderful.
Anna, we're going to have to move on. Mr. Duffy has to go on. Thanks so much for the phone call. And one more quick question. This kind of wraps things up, Sean. It's an email question from Mark in Wausau about bipartisanship and getting along in Washington. Here's his question. I'm going to read it verbatim. Republican Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell said his top goal was to make Barack Obama a one-term president. If Mitt Romney is elected president, how would you react if Democratic Senate Leader Harry Reid announces that his top priority is to make Romney a one-term president, and he's going to filibuster everything to make sure Romney doesn't get any of his legislation passed?
Well, listen, I think I saw the partisanship when George Bush was there. You see a lot of partisanship there. That's one of the most frustrating things for me, the partisanship that exists in Washington. As a freshman congressman, it's actually been shocking that we can't come together and see things get done. I don't think we're that far away, but on my part, just to name a couple things that I've worked on, Glenn, the St. Croix River Bridge, I worked with Senator Amy Klobuchar from Minnesota, she in the Senate, me in the House. We worked with Democrats and Republicans in both states to make sure we got that bridge built. It had been held up for over 20 years. It was a great bipartisan two states working together to get it done, but it took both sides, both parties working together. I'm a member of the Great Lakes Task Force. I'm a co-chair to make sure we come together as members of Congress in the House and the Senate, Republicans and Democrats, protecting Lake Superior, protecting its environment, and also making sure that we can effectively and safely still use the Great Lakes as an economic resource. And as you well know, I voted to continue funding for NPR. My Republican friends who listen to this program, they're outraged by that vote. But I thought it was the right vote, and I was one of only a few Republicans to reach over and continue funding for programs like this. I think it's important. And listen, as you can tell from the callers, not everyone always agrees with me. But I think it's important that people have an option to hear all different voices. This is part of the different voices that people hear. I know people in the 7th District enjoy it. They like it. And so I voted to support it. And I'm proud of that, even though I still get, I get whiplashed every time I go see my Republican colleagues. One of the most, it's that vote that I hear about the most as I travel around. And I'm proud of it. I think you guys do a good job. And, I'll continue to support NPR.
Well, we thank you and Big Bird thanks you, Mr.
Yes.
Duffy.
We'll leave Big Bird alone. I think he's been in the debate a little too long this week.
Looking forward to seeing you and Pat Kreitlow here at UW Marathon County on October 22nd and then November 1st at UW Superior. 7th District Congressman Sean Duffy, he's got to move on. We're going to be joined by Eric Giordano, the Executive Director of the Wisconsin Institute for Public Policy and Service for the rest of the half hour. We're going to be talking about politics. So if you're on the line, stay on the line. We'll get your calls in. And Sean, thanks so much for being with us. It's always a pleasure.
Hey, thank you, Glenn. Have a great day.
I'm Glenn Mobrig. This is Route 51 Regional Talk Radio on the Ideas Network.
Support for Wisconsin Public Radio comes from UMR, a United Healthcare company providing employee benefits administration, integrated health management, and pharmacy benefits administration for self-funded employers throughout the U.S. More about UMR at umr.com.
I'm Glenn Mobrig. This is Route 51 Regional Talk Radio on the Ideas Network. We just heard from 7th District Congressman Sean Duffy for the first half of this show. We're joined right now by Eric Giordano of the Wisconsin Institute for Public Policy and Service. And incidentally, Mr. Kreitlow was a guest on Route 51 on September 13th. That debate coming up here at UW Marathon County the evening of October 22nd. That's a Monday night. Eric, your impression of the 7th Congressional District race as we head into the last month. Sean Duffy, a very youthful, energetic, and incumbent who's bucked his party in at least a couple of key instances, one of them funding for public radio. Pat Kreitlow, on the other hand, a very smart, articulate guy from a working-class background who says he'll represent the interests of ordinary people, the kinds of people that he grew up with.
Well, the district was leaning Republican prior to the last election, and now this district has been rated the 7th most, I guess, friendly towards Republicans, in part thanks to the redistricting, and that's going to take effect here. So really, you know, Pat Kreitlow's got an uphill battle on a couple of fronts. He's got an energetic, as you put it, young congressman just coming off his freshman year. He's popular, and you know, the district's leaning Republican.
Now, the Medicare debate, as you just heard, is a huge issue in the district. Kreitlow accuses Duffy of trying to kill Medicare by privatizing it with a voucher system. Duffy, as you heard, accuses him of supporting what he calls a $716 billion cut to the program to fund Obamacare.
Yeah, I mean, this is a really, really difficult issue. And unfortunately, campaign seasons are not the time to really, for the public to understand what's going on. We're getting little sound bites. We're getting little pieces of information here or there, half truths. And really, this is a very complicated matter. Medicare needs reform. It needs change. Both sides claim that they have ideas for it, but they're not really getting into specifics here.
Let's go to the phones. We still have callers stacked up, and we encourage you to call us with your thoughts on the congressional race in the 7th District, the race between Barack Obama and Mitt Romney for the presidency, the fact that it's tightened up all across the country, but Mr. Obama seems to hold an edge in the swing states, including Wisconsin. And let's give us your thoughts about the vice presidential debate that's taking place this evening between Joe Biden and Paul Ryan. That number again is 1-800-780-9742, 1-800-780-9742. Let's go to Debbie in Wausau. Debbie, you were waiting for Sean Duffy, and you didn't quite get in under the wire, but you're here with me and Eric Giordano right now. What point did you want to make?
Well, I guess I was just curious on Congressman Duffy's war on women, or the Republican war on women, and what was his thoughts about it?
And what are your thoughts about it? Apparently, we lost Debbie. While we're on the subject of that, Eric, there's been some breaking news on that. State Representative Roger Rivard, who is in the 7th Congressional District, issued a statement saying, I've got to quote this directly. He made a statement saying that his father had told him that when he was young that some girls rape easy. as a way to warn that a woman could agree to sex but then later claim that it wasn't consensual. He donated to Mr. Duffy's campaign. Mr. Duffy has condemned him for those remarks, saying no one should ever under any circumstance diminish or trivialize rape. As a father of four young girls, Sean Duffy goes on, I condemn his absurd and inappropriate comments. And he even turned back some of the money that had been donated to his campaign by this Republican state representative to the Center Against Sexual and Domestic Abuse in Superior. Pat Kreitlow, on the other hand, says, it's not just what these men are saying, he says, but what they are doing. And he goes on to say Paul Ryan and Sean Duffy co-sponsored Todd Akin's bill that would redefine rape. They are far outside the mainstream on reproductive rights and issues facing women and families. So he's going to be sending a mailer out on this very subject. So Betsy called about the war on women. You can see it happening nationwide as an issue that some put credence in, some don't, and it's apparently going to rear its head here in the 7th Congressional District.
Right, and Betsy, I apologize that I can't really give you the type of response that you're looking for with Congressman Duffy. I would like to hear what he has to say as well. This is definitely a very big issue, not only for women, but for many people across the country. We've seen this sort of rhetoric, as you described, Glenn, by this representative, this official, that have been condemned, and I think this is a hot-button issue that Republicans are trying very hard to sort of turn around to show that they really do support women. But the truth of the matter is that, you know, we know that the Republican platform really is, you know, not pro-choice. It hasn't been for a while. It's not. You know, it's been more conservative, and we really do have a major difference of viewpoints between the Democrats and the Republicans on this issue.
Let's go to Don in Wausau. Don also had a question that he wanted to ask Sean Duffy, and he too didn't make it under the wire. Don, you're on Route 51 with me and Eric Giordano.
Hello, gentlemen. I was at a forum last year, and I was asked what question I had for Mr. Duffy. And I started out with values. And when he read that I had asked about values, he mocked me and asked me if I had trouble with my values, which I thought was very unprofessional of him in the first place. Well, second of all, when I did ask the question, I asked him about Grover Norquist and how he can sign a contract with him, and who else might he have signed a contract with, who else might he might be represented by. So I hear he still doesn't want to answer this question. And to me, that tells me that he's more controlled by, and I seen it when I asked the question, because the people that were laughing and mocking me were all his Tea Party constituents.
Well, Don, thanks so much for the phone call. Eric Giordano, the Grover Norquist pledge, don't raise taxes under any circumstances. It has been signed by, I think, 250 congressmen?
Yeah.
And Mr. Duffy is one of them.
Right, and I was actually glad that you asked him about it, and I was actually a little surprised that he said he wished he hadn't signed it. So I thought that was a great question and an interesting response. I think, in a way, you know, this is one of the prices that all elected officials pay. You know, they're beholden to the party to some extent. Sean Duffy clearly is. I think he was definitely railroaded into that. He's not the only one, by the way. There's some very seasoned Republican elected officials in other states and in our own who were railroaded into signing it. I think privately they wish they didn't have to, but they do, and that's part of playing the game. Now, you know, can you play both sides of the fiddle? I think Sean Duffy does that a little bit, and I think it gets him in a little bit of trouble. I think, though, primarily he does agree. I mean, he said that very clearly, that he's not in favor of raising taxes as a solution to, you know, getting out of debt and solving our deficit and economic problems.
1-800-780-9742. We're talking about the congressional race, the presidential race, the vice presidential debates, and anything else you want to talk about. I'm Glenn Moberg with Eric Giordano of the Wisconsin Institute for Public Policy and Service. Let's go to Jim in Rhinelander. Jim, you're on Route 51.
Hi, how are you?
Doing well.
I just have a general comment. I wish the Democrats in any race, even at the local level, would pound on this, because I'm tired of hearing from the other side that businesses create jobs, that rich people create jobs. That's simply not the fact. The fact is consumers create jobs. You could have a business, and the only reason you're going to hire people or hire more people is because consumers are buying the product. And to think that, you know, the businesses are the ones that are creating the jobs is simply not true. You need a strong middle class that's going to buy the product. There's only so many millionaires in the country that can only buy so many clothes and things like that. And actually, I heard a, I forgot his name, but just yesterday I heard a billionaire giving a talk on TED, and he made a very good analogy. He said, saying businesses create jobs are the job creators is like saying the squirrel created evolution. I mean, that talk from the Republican side is just completely backward.
Jim, thanks so much for the phone call. Eric Giordano, do you have any analysis that you can add to that?
Well, I think that's a really astute observation. But you've got to give the Republicans credit, and you've got to give Frank Luntz, Republican strategist and rhetorician, you know, masterful rhetorician, credit for creating the term job creators.
Yes, he did create it. Did you see him on Bill Maher's show?
Right.
Maher asked him at the very end of the show, you know, we used to call him rich people, now we call them job creators. Is that yours? And Luntz didn't say a thing, but he held his hand out to shake his hand.
Right. And this just shows that what's happened is Republicans have really captured, a strong position here. And I think it's really hard to argue, that businesses don't create jobs, because they do. But as your caller points out, you know, the businesses aren't doing a great job at that right now. Why is that? It's not because they don't want to create jobs. It's because the economy's not doing well. The global economy's not doing well. People aren't buying goods. So there's a lot of hopes that are riding on the idea that somehow consumerism is going to come back, the economy is going to grow again. And I think both sides, to some extent, are hinging their hopes on that. And we just don't know. I mean, they can't control that.
Henry Ford said that he wanted to pay his workers on his assembly line enough money so they could all go out
and buy
Ford cars.
Right.
1-800-780-9742. I'm Glenn Moberg with Eric Giordano for the remaining 10 minutes or so of this program. This is Route 51 Regional Talk Radio on the Ideas Network.
Support for WPR comes from Rely Local Wausau, building the local economy and strengthening the community by making local business everybody's business. More about locally owned and operated businesses at relylocal.com.
I'm Glenn Moberg. This is Route 51 Regional Talk Radio. We've got Eric Giordano of the Wisconsin Institute for Public Policy and Service. If you want to give us a quick phone call, we can probably squeeze in one or two more. 1-800-780-9742. Eric, what do you make of the turnaround in the polls in the last week following the president's lackluster performance in the debate and Governor Romney's very strong performance? Do you think the president is in trouble?
He could be. He could be. If he performs that way again in another debate, I think people are going to start running for the hills. I think one thing that the debate did is it definitely energized the Republican base. I mean, Mitt Romney has never been anyone's first choice. I exaggerate a little here, but he's always been the second or third choice of most Republicans. Here he is, the front runner. People, you know, want to have a reason to support him, and by seeing his performance and how he really did well against Obama, I think they're believing that he could win this, and I think they might be more interested in voting.
And can a strong performance by Joe Biden turn this around for the Democrats? Is that asking too much for a vice presidential debate? And after all, Paul Ryan comes across as a very young, very likable, non-threatening guy, regardless of what you think of his ideas.
I think history shows that the vice presidential debate really doesn't have a significant impact. However, if one of them really blows a gasket or you know, takes a pratfall, we could have a serious problem, or either party could have a serious problem. But most likely what's going to happen is Paul Ryan's going to come across, as you put it, as a smart, energetic young man who holds his own, who's a number cruncher and knows his numbers and figures. And Biden's going to come across as, you know, as a true blue Democrat. And hopefully for the Democratic Party, he won't do anything that's going to, you know, get his name in the headline in an inappropriate way.
The national polls show Romney with a slight edge, but they also show Obama maintaining his lead, although it is by a reduced margin, in the swing states. Is it possible that we could have another Electoral College nightmare? Because if the election were held today, Romney might win the popular vote and Obama might win the electoral vote.
Well, that's definitely possible, and whether or not that's a nightmare is really up for interpretation. I think it's very unlikely we're going to have the type of repetition, repeating of the event that we had in the 2000 election, where, you know, we had the actual, you know, hanging chads and, you know, the margins of, you know, 5, 10, 30 votes deciding the outcome of the election. I don't think that's going to happen. But we could definitely have a distinctive difference between the electoral vote and the popular vote.
There's also something like 10 different scenarios in which the Electoral College could end up in a 269-269 tie. And what happens? It goes to the House of Representatives then, right?
Right. It would.
And they
would.
And there's an Electoral College nightmare for you.
That would, yes, I think you're right, Glenn.
What do you make of the charge that Mitt Romney won the debate by lying? Is that just sour grapes from Democrats? But on the other hand, they can point to a litany of policy reversals, some that have just happened in the last couple of days.
Well, I think it is a bit of sour grapes, and I think it's also an attempt to spin what was clearly a poor performance. You know, both sides definitely do not give details, and that's part of the problem. So are they lying? Are they sins of omission? Absolutely. You know, are they trying to change the, you know, how people are perceiving their policies? Definitely Romney came in there and he flustered Obama because he basically said, you know, hey, I'm not raising taxes. I'm not going to not tax the rich.
And covering pre-existing conditions, which his own campaign had to walk back 10 minutes later.
Right. And so I think, yeah, there were definitely some things that might have skirted the truth a little bit, but I think that's sort of, you know, what we can expect from these debates, because we're not really going to get into the substance of a lot of these matters.
And I wonder whether or not Mr. Obama is really a good debater. People say that he lost most of the debates, 4 years ago to Hillary Clinton. John McCain looked emotionally unstable in some of the exchanges. It's not that Obama really outshined him. So, you know, maybe we're dealing with a man who's a great orator, very good retail politician, but not much of a debater.
Well, maybe not. I mean, although, you know, some people say even his oratory skills are really based on the idea of being able to have a teleprompter in front of him. You know, and he has given a couple of good speeches, and even Republicans will acknowledge that. But yeah, I think he's got to, you know, stop trying to answer things in such detail in a way that he doesn't come across as really knowing the facts and being passionate about them.
I think passion is a big thing. Eric Giordano, thanks so much. We also want to thank 7th District Republican Congressman Sean Duffy, who is with us for the first half of the show. Eric, of course, with the Wisconsin Institute for Public Policy and Service. Sean Duffy faces Democrat Pat Kreitlow in the November 6th general election, and we've got that debate happening here at the UW-Marathon County Campus on Monday, October 22nd. I'm Glenn Moberg of Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks to our executive producer, Rick Ryer, our on-air producer, Jane Ritger. Next Thursday, it's a big night here at UW-Marathon County as we host the second debate between gubernatorial candidates Democrat Tammy Baldwin and Republican Tommy Thompson. Now, next Thursday at 5 on Route 51, we preview the debate and talk politics with an all-star panel, Democrat Christine Bremer-Moogley of Wausau, Republican Bob Williams of Stevens Point, and our special guest, Independent Bill Krause of Madison. Thanks for riding along with us today. Forward, as we say in Wisconsin. And until next week, we're heading out of town.